assist us then to engage really in a very meaningful way, in a very meaningful way. And then that will assist them to address some of the challenges that they raised for our people. And we are very pleased that Amakos are here. And then we may also meet them and outside the House of Traditional Leaders. Meet Amayamakos that want to engage with us and have discussion with them. And then address some of these issues and challenges that we are facing. What though we dismiss, we condemn the deserve, is just an attempt to say, members of parliament don't know what they're doing. As if you are not belonging to communities. Suddenly there are those who belong more to community than us also belong to community. We dismiss that thing with contempt it deserves because it was meant to blackmail members of parliament. Rather than engaging with us in a positive sense, then we got blackmail. We are not in London, we are here. We are part and parcel of the cultural development of our society. And then we rejected this thing because I thought it was a very backward thing. Very backward thing. When members of parliament who are there anyway in communities themselves, and that they must be part of the, part of the. But generally we rejected that, and I think it was accepted in many parts of the country. And again, thank you to Inkosi Ndevu. That was with us until the end in terms of the Eastern Cape visit. Was with us and we're treated extremely well. And thank you very much, Ngozi. Thank you very much. Of course, we also express our condolences to Ngozi. They ended up in a situation that is uncalled for. It's just uncalled for to ban any human beings. It's just uncalled for, really. Notwithstanding whatever circumstances, it can't just be right to do such backward thing. Opening human beings. And then thank you, Comrade Deputy Minister, we have been holding this. We are with us also for this engagement, and members, I think, are here. Nkosi Mahlangu and the team, you can also take us through on some of the issues, let us engage openly. And then we are doing this thing for the sake of our country, all of us. And then all of us must work together, ensure that we come to compromises where we need compromises. But at the same time, we can never accept young male dying. No society should ever appreciate that, regardless whatever culture that you are talking about. Also, there's no culture that encourages people to die anyway. No culture that does that. We shouldn't be tempted to defend something that is wrong. And we raise this thing in all public hearings and it was well accepted by people generally that all of us must work together, Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, to address some of these challenges. Nkosi Mahlangu and the team, can we invite you then to make the presentation and then we engage. Department of Basic Education is also here. We'll also allow you to engage us on some of the issues. If other department joins us, also we'll allow them platform there to have a discussion with us on this. And that discussion belongs to all of us, colleagues, and we must be free to engage with respect and diligence and ensure that we work out some of these issues. Kosia, Mangubinga.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair of this Portfolio Committee, Ubaba Mtakane, Deputy Minister. Baba Obed Bapela, responsible for traditional affairs within COPTA. Honorable members of this committee, the stakeholders that are here, my colleagues, Ben Koshi Dikhale, who's the chairperson of the House of Traditional Leaders in Limpopo. He is one of those that we take pride of as a sector when it comes to this issue of initiation. We are also with Nkosi Ndevu, who is part of the committee that deals with the issue of initiation, mainly trying to find solutions towards the problems that we are facing in initiation schools, and officials that are here. We first want to take this opportunity, Chair, to appreciate as the National House for according us an opportunity to engage, and also to declare upfront, Chair, that we've been part of this process from policy formulation as the National House. And it has always been our wish that we must have a framework that will guide provinces, that would also assist us to be able to deal with this death. One has always said that when we talk of the massacre, the unfortunate massacre in Marikana where 44 people died, it is taken extremely serious. And yet, when you talk about the deaths in initiation schools, we've seen very little activity to be able to resolve those problems, where you find that in 1 year, 120 boys would lose their lives. And that happens under our watch, not only under our watch as traditional leaders, but also under your watch as well as parliamentarians that are sitting in here. So we highly appreciate this opportunity that you are giving us today to be able to come and discuss and possibly find ways of how we could circumvent or intervene in making sure that the boys that go to initiation schools, they go alive and still come back alive as their parents had intended for that to happen. And we also appreciate the fact that UPCOS has been consulted on this bill. I've had calls that are saying we have not been consulted. It was a bit surprising because even from the policy phase, one was running around the country trying to push provinces to implement some of the sections of the policy whilst it was still policy, even before it became part of the legislation, because we believe that other sections that are on that policy then could assist us in terms of intervening and resolving the problems that are there. We also want to express our gratitude for the public hearings that you've held from the Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, Northern Cape and Northwest last month. We also are aware that there were problems in Mpumalanga, especially in my area where I come from, because problems happened there. We want to apologize for what has transpired, and also to say that you know, when you're talking initiation, I think a lot of communities are very sensitive on that topic, and I think it also makes it a bit difficult for us to properly intervene or come up with interventions that are acceptable in communities, because when you start touching or talking to that subject, I think people are they become extremely aggressive, and I think in our culture it is a period where one sees extreme aggression, you know, when it is time for initiation, and that's the culture of it, unfortunately, and it makes it a bit difficult to come into that space, especially if you've not gone through in initiation. I know, Chair, that you are also planning to hold public hearings in the Western Cape. It is appreciated. I think the Western Cape is also one of those areas where we are experiencing serious problems when it comes to deaths. You'd find that you only have 1,000 people that would have undergone initiation, and there'll be 6 deaths. So if you look at that ratio in relation to the number of people that would go and the number of people that would lose their lives, in the main, it is extremely high. So we appreciate that you are planning to hold those public hearings. And we know that we don't have recognized traditional leaders in those communities, but I know I've interacted with quite a number of structures that have been set up by the province to be able to deal with the issue of initiation. And I think most of them have very great plans on how to resolve problems. But the biggest problem has been the issue of implementation. And also, Chair, what excites us is that once we have this as an act, when this bill finally becomes an act, we'll finally have some form of a budget because it will be a costed piece of legislation. We've been complaining from the National House that you cannot resolve these problems if you don't have a unit that deals with this issue. We all know that this happens every year. We all know that in June and December you have initiation. But you must have people that are working right through to look at compliance issues, because I think it is mainly where we do not adhere to compliance issues that we will experience problems. And I think this bill, Chair, will also assist in terms of coming up with clear roles for government, for traditional leaders as well, because in other areas, as much as people will know their roles and responsibilities, I think other people would want to see that being documented, or if there are ambiguities, you could always refer to some piece of legislation just to make sure that people are doing what they are supposed to be doing. I've always said that in the Eastern Cape, it is the only province that has traditional nurses that specifically attend to young boys. Each and every boy would have a traditional nurse that is allocated to them, but that is where we experience the biggest of problems. So now the question is it these traditional nurses that are creating a problem, of which I sometimes believe they are, but I'm sure in the Eastern Cape you'll get a different view. But to me, that's where we are having serious problems. And I would wish that somewhere within the legislation we need to find space, or maybe check in terms of the legislation in the Eastern Cape, does it not deal thoroughly with the issues of traditional nurses? Because despite the number of deaths that we would experience in the Eastern Cape, I think there's the biggest number of amputations, penile amputations. It tells you that there is something wrong that these traditional nurses are doing. If you look at the statistics, I think between 2005 and I think it was until 2010, I think for 10 years, from 2008 until 2018 or so, I can't remember, but there is over 90 boys that have had penile amputations. And I believe that a person that has experienced that trauma becomes an extreme danger if he's not being dealt with within that community, because this person doesn't feel worthy to be a man. They would tend to be abusive in that community. They would, because people call them names, and they suffer greatly. So, of which I believe that it is an area that will have to be looked at. So, Chair, I was just appreciating, but also highlighting some of the issues that I believe we may need to look at. We agree, Chair, that this bill will go a long way in terms of assisting us in dealing with this, but I know that there will be a number of issues that may not be sufficiently covered in the bill, or that may be a bit of concern to traditional leaders and some of us. As we know that we are custodians of culture, and some of the issues that would be on the bill, there are some areas that you cannot be too explicit. when you talk about them. But I think even though we must find a way of how do we craft it, that it is not too explicit, but on interpretation, we all understand what we mean around it. Because one, in my culture, when I was talking to my colleagues earlier, that when one talks of circumcision within initiation, I've always been talking about the surgical part of initiation. I never mention it, but everybody knows which surgical part of the initiation that one is talking about, because you don't want to go into detail and be too explicit even around that term. I think that's what makes people hot under the collar in most cases, when you just go and you just become too explicit about everything. So all of a sudden people believe that you are bringing the issue of initiation right into the kitchen. I know that there are problems within initiation, but I think as we try to find regulations, I think we also are to be a bit sensitive, but be direct in terms of addressing what ought to be addressed, Chair. I think in terms of giving a bit of background on initiation, initiation is viewed differently from one community to the other. It is always considered sacred and secret by those who practice it, and they would always prefer in the main that people that discuss it should be people that have gone through the issue of initiation. But I think whenever I would try to explain to my community that yes, it is a sacred and secret issue, but the biggest problem is that we have left it for too long in the hands of wrong people, up to a point where they are deaths. And once they are deaths, it becomes very difficult now to be sensitive on any issue that you are trying to deal with. And I think probably even us as traditional leaders, it may have been, Chair, that you know, when democracy came, there's been a lot of roles and functions that have slowly been taken from the sector, of which have prevented the sector from being able to deal with some of the issues that you'd experience in initiation. And I think when some of those traditional leaders find themselves helpless, they just leave it as, you know, they just leave this practice for anyone to do, because they'll say, you know, even if I summon people to come, if they don't come, there's nothing I can do. If I want to discuss this and people decide they want to go somewhere to discuss it, so why should we participate? If somebody has done anything wrong, you want to have a discussion with that person. If that person does not want to come, then nothing happens. So the issue, I think those that are always opposing the sector, when one brings the issue of the traditional cost bill, they would think that one is trying to, you know, use the backdoor to try and justify the existence of the traditional cost bill. But I think it is where it could come in, you know, because I know that when one, I went to initiation school in 1989, I know how they used to administer it. I know the laws that were supposed to be followed, and all those are slowly you know, losing their space. Chair, we have traditional leaders are slowly not doing what they were supposed to be doing, because they'll always be this thing that we're not empowered to be able to deal with some of those issues. So when one looks at initiation, to us, circumcision is not initiation, and I think there's always that confusion. Anybody can go and circumcise anywhere, but when you go to initiation, it is a very small part of of initiation. With others see it as a school of life that constitutes the rite of passage from boyhood to manhood in some communities. In other communities, that's where people do it for religion, where they feel that in terms of their religious belief, that it, you know, it brings them closer to their ancestry. So it differs from one area to the other, and I think it will also bring the question of age as we continue in this discussion. So it is important that we must debunk the myth that the initiation is always a rite of passage from boyhood to manhood or from girlhood to womanhood. This is not necessarily the case, as there are various stages of initiation in a girl or a boy's life. I think in my culture, when one has gone, you know, we used to, we had our own sort of like calendar of how do we describe stages of a young man. I think, you know, we go once every 4 years to initiation. And the way we would gauge the person's age is that when one has gone to initiation this year, or I would have a child who is supposed to go to initiation, there must be 4 initiations that will follow before that person goes. So, and by that time, so it means that you should be 18, 20, and then we'll give you a period of 4 years to try. So after that, during that 4 years, that's when now you start having a relationship with your elders and your fathers. You are able to spend time with them. They start discussing things with you. They are sort of like training you now towards being a young adult. And hopefully, they are hoping that within that 4 years, towards the end of that 4 years, you'll find a wife. So by that time, you should be about 24. And then you'd get married and have a child. Then there would be another 4 years where... So even in your stages, after... Then there would be 4 initiation schools that would follow after you, where you are just seen as isogana, a young man. And after the 4 years gone, then you go into the stages of fatherhood, and then stages of being a grandfather. And so that's how we used to calculate our age and stages of life. But it differs in other communities. I mean, in Limpopo, they would look at it completely different from how we would look at it. So now, when you look at these differences, now it poses a question on this age of 18, where we must ask ourselves the question whether, when a boy is at the age of 18, when he comes back, is he a fully fledged man, or, you know, what is it? Tinagi disogan. You're not necessarily a fully fledged man. We sogan, so it means now you are at a stage where you are father. No, because when you are at initiation school, that's where you spend a lot of time with your father, or the male elders in the family. That's when they start engaging you even on things that are supposed to be secrets in the family. That's when they start, so you are the one that can bring them food whenever they are sitting in the crawl. You are the one that they start interacting with. They are starting to see you, you know, whether you are going to be a fine young man, or, you know, they start instilling, they start telling you the wrong things that you are doing, because you now start to spend more time with them. So you are now a young man in training, but you're not necessarily a man yet. So you are in training. But in other cultures, of which I think this practice works, I mean, if you look at Limpopo, their legislation spoke about 18, about 12 years. You know, that a boy can go to initiation school at the age of 12. And in Limpopo, they don't call him a man when he comes back at 12 years. He's gone to initiation. They have a term that they call him, but he's not necessarily a man. You know, but he will be able to instill some knowledge to the others that will follow him. You know, there are responsibilities that will start being given. by the family, you know. So we will have to seriously debate the issue of age, because, Chair, as much as we want to come up with interventions, our interventions should not lead to problems. And I believe that if we would come and say, Limpopo, from today on, we will only accept those that are 18, chances are we are going to bring serious problems in Limpopo. We might start experiencing deaths as well in Limpopo, because they do it differently. You know, the system works for them. I mean, you'd have 20, 30,000 boys that would go in one year. They'll always come back alive, all of them. You know, you go to the Eastern Cape, the age of 18 is key, and come end of the year, 60, 70 of them are gone. They've lost their lives. So what are we saying? Will we say this age of 18? Because it's something that we need to thoroughly look at, Chair. There may be other reasons that maybe my colleague from Limpopo might want to give, but in the main, it is something that they would always try to teach us, but they would keep it as secret as possible, because they don't want too much interference through legislation in that part, because they've already resolved issues that are supposed to be regulated by legislation, and they believe that those are issues that will assist them in terms of resolving the problem. We also welcome the covering of cultural initiation for both men and women in the bill. I think recently we've seen one or two problems that are starting to creep in, where in Mpumalanga we had, I think it was three on the border of Mpumalanga and Limpopo, and it was in my area again, where we had three young girls that passed on. And what we discovered was that, jealousies, within the two groups, where one feels that now you have this one that is having a bigger number, and then a person now starts poisoning others. So those would be issues of murder that have to be properly investigated. But I mean, in terms of maybe regulations, I think that's where we need to come in terms of, looking at who would give proper permission for people to hold initiation, and the person should be able to have a discussion with them. Because now what we do with the legislations, provincial legislations, it allows us to have thorough engagements with those that we give permissions to for initiation, and we know what we need to take them through for them to be able to run an instance-free initiation school. So we must, however, take cognizance of realities that CIB was done to address primarily the challenges facing male initiation, and I think that's what we need to be focusing on, namely illegal schools, commercialization of the initiation, bogus traditional surgeons, abductions, other illegalities that often result in injuries and death. So there are very few challenges associated with initiation schools for girls. But we thought it is important that women that have gone to initiation that are within the sector should be able to go and monitor and see that things are going according to plan. So the cultural or language groups in South Africa that practice male initiations are the Vendors, Tsongas, and Ndebeles, I think, Pedis, Tswanas, and Xhosas, and they have different names of which they used to call male initiations, which would be Murundu, Ingoma, Ingoma, Lebuloko, Maulualugo. So it differs from one culture to the other in terms of what it is called and how it is done. So this practice takes place in all provinces in the country, and I think we've seen an upsurge in Gauteng, and the deputy minister always says we must keep an eye on Gauteng. There will be serious problems if we lose focus in that province. So this cultural practice of initiation has over the years faced serious challenges. We've seen a lot of illegal schools, the mushrooming of illegal schools that are operated by bogus surgeons. The practice has been commercialized, as one has stated. There's been kidnappings where you find the kumbi will be sent to Davidson to load boys and bring them to Muteti, Dennilton in Mpumalanga, Limpopo border. Then there's also serious challenges that arise in the Eastern Cape. I think that's where we have, the most problems, despite the money that has been poured into that province to try and resolve it. I think Eastern Cape receives more funds, more assistance than any other province to be able to try and deal with this issue. But we are still experiencing problems. And we also want to commend the CRL Rights Commission that in this province, where the DM always says we must always watch this province, they decided that they must suspend initiation until problems are solved. Because in Gauteng, it is used for different things. I mean, in many townships, they use initiation to train would-be thugs. That's where they train them on how to steal cars, on how to do all sorts of wrong things. And that's what we found when we're doing our rounds. That's where you find gangsters. And so it's different gangsters that are in initiation schools, and people are being initiated into gangsterism, of which I think is something that we need to deal with. And I think this piece of legislation would assist as well, Chair. In addressing some of the problems that we are dealing with in the in Gauteng. So government and the House Chair, we came up with some interventions that included the 12-point plan. But I think I must say, Chair, I know that some of the issues are supposed to be covered in the GKLP. With bogus traditional leaders. There's too many bogus traditional leaders that are giving out permissions for initiation. And that's where we're experiencing serious deaths. Because before initiation would happen, all those that are recognized as traditional leaders, they are taken through, they know that these are the do's and don'ts, and then they'll take their communities through. But the one that is a bogus traditional leader will always be operating in the dark and in secret, so they would not even have meetings with people that would be taking their boys to initiation. They would not be able to take them through even this 12-point plan that we came up with. Well, it was a 12-point plan that was supposed to look at the governance issues of initiation, who gives out permission, which area initiation ought to be happening, what is a legal school as compared to an illegal school, what needs to be checked, the intervention by the Department of Health in terms of regulating the price and the responsibilities of different role players. So that's what the 12-point plan was trying to deal with, even the pre-screening, of which is compulsory, the consent that is supposed to be given by parents. So that 12-point plan, I think it find expression, Chair, within this bill. Some of its key elements have been covered. So we would plead, Chair, that we need resources, especially looking at this Department of Traditional Affairs in terms of dealing with some of the issues that we are dealing with. I think we're finding Department of Health being the one that is seriously involved, but they don't own this competence. You know, theirs is to care about the deaths and the lives of initiates, but I think the problems are caused by non-compliance and all these issues of which this very same department is supposed to deal with. Because when the Department of Health comes in, they are now reacting to problems that are there already. And yet, if this Department of Traditional Affairs had proper resources to deal with issues that they must deal with, they could have even reduced what the Department of Health is committing towards dealing with these problems. We've seen the SAPS not necessarily doing what they are supposed to be doing, because they were saying that there was no legislation that was giving them powers to act. So people will always be, there will not be action that is taken against those that have killed. And the NPA has not been prosecuting as well. I think the question that, I think what may have made your visiting Mpumalanga not to be as pleasant as it was. It was I think for the first time in 2013, there was almost, 29 boys that died. And after that, there was more than 29 arrests that were made by the NPA. And I think when you go to the Eastern Cape, you'll find 80 deaths and there will be one arrest. You know, and there was a, but it seems this government, all these issues, when they have to arrest, it is this community that is arrested. And where there are serious problems, no one is moving. So you've always had that anger that was there. And of which I have been saying that I think the wrong people were arrested, because we focused on traditional surgeons. And in the main, it's not necessarily the traditional surgeons that will kill these boys. They are, and we said, can't we have a discussion even with NPA and direct them to the real culprits that are killing our boys? And I think that appetite was not as much there as it should have been up until we engaged the NPA and started having discussions with them, because we even found medical doctors being arrested. out of the 29. So to a point where medical doctors said, no, we are not participating in the issues of initiation anymore, because we are trying to resolve, and when a person dies, they come back to me to arrest me, so we don't want to get involved anymore. And yet, you found the community that was trying to infuse medical assistance with your traditional system where they were trying to bring it together. So you don't have that much appetite from doctors anymore, and it is starting to create problems. So the customer initiation bill, Chair, was introduced in the National Assembly on the 5th of May, and it has been classified as Section 76 bill, and as a bill falling within the ambit of Section 18(1) of the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act of 2003. So the bill was formally referred to the National House of Traditional Leaders by the Secretary of Parliament on the 28th of May 2018 for inputs. So this submission is made by the National House as a statutory body established in terms of the National House of Traditional Leaders Act of 2009. The role of the National House is to promote the role of traditional leadership within a democratic constitutional dispensation. Its main objective is to deal with matters relating to traditional leadership, the role of traditional leaders, customary law, and the customs of communities observing a system of customary law. And I think this system of initiation falls exactly within that ambit. So our comments, Chair, these are our formal comments. Other comments I was making as we're going in terms of the observations that one has been making, and hoping that they will assist us and the committee in terms of finding solutions towards the problems that we are facing as traditional leaders that could be resolved by the bill, and also the challenges that the bill might face going forward. So there are areas in the bill that the National House would like Parliament to seriously look at. Below are the comments of the National House of Traditional as per the different clauses. I think the first one being definitions, clause one that deals with definitions, abduction and kidnapping. So the two terms to us are quite related and both actions are unlawful. So the context in which kidnapping is used creates a different meaning to what it really is. It might be necessary to relook at the meaning of the two definitions. The second one being the one that deals with circumcision. In the South African context, this refers only to male initiates. So females are not circumcised at all. That's according to our knowledge. We, however, agree that there should be no acts such as the removal of genitals in females, and we are told that it is happening in some other parts of the continent. I am not aware that it is happening in our areas. I think our females, I think they keep it a complete secret in terms of what happens there. And I think it is us as men that would always be blepping around in terms of what we do. But with our females, we don't know what happens there. And we believe that there is no genital mutilation, unless if somebody can prove and say there is one. But I think all the females that have gone, they've never spoken about it. Apparently, there is nothing like that. So we believe that there is nothing like that. So the issue of curriculum as a set of learning content for initiation and includes any customary or cultural practice that forms part of the initiation process. So traditional leaders are of the view that the word curriculum should not be defined in the bill. Traditional and cultural customs and rituals performed and taught at initiation schools are sacred and secret and should not be made public. Clause 2, application, objectives, interpretation, and prohibitions. Two, subsection 4, the minimum age of 40 years, we believe that may not always be practical, as there are practitioners who may be younger but have proven track record. They are known in the community that they know what they are doing, and they've done a good job over many years where there's not been problems. But we are of the view that what should be inserted is that, or if someone younger be someone with appropriate experience and proven track record recommended by a traditional leader working in conjunction with the community. Even in the cases of medical doctors, there are some who get their academic qualifications in their 20s and do medical male circumcisions for boys in their private surgeries or hospitals. So the procedure of which is basically the same that performed for initiates in the bush. In some other cultures, like in Ndebele, the traditional surgeon is not known until the traditional leader reveals him or at the correct time. Because I think what has been raised in the main is that a traditional surgeon will go through certain rituals. And when it comes to initiation, I think it is the parents, it is the traditional leader, it is traditional surgeons that will go through some rituals before initiation happens. So it is only a person that has gone through those rituals that would always allow to participate within initiation. But because we are trying to bring in doctors, I think we would also try to encourage them, especially those that have gone to initiation, to go through some of the rituals that that would prescribe to them as traditional leaders that are practicing those cultures. I think in terms of clause 6 on disqualifications, clause 6 of the bill provides for disqualifications of persons who will not be eligible to be designated as members of the National Initiation Oversight Committee. So the National House recommends that members of the National Initiation Oversight Committee should have undergone initiation. Otherwise, they should not be eligible to be designated as members of that committee. Clause 11, establishment, composition, and term of office. Clause 11 of the bill makes provision for the establishment of PICC in the province and the role of traditional leaders in these structures. However, the Western Cape province, there are no recognized traditional leaders and no provincial house of traditional leaders, but initiation practices to take place every year in both summer and winter. So members of the House were of the view that when it comes to the Western Cape, we need to find space for the Khoisan leaders, especially those that are practicing initiation, that they be part of the PICC in the province. So we're suggesting that at least there must be 3 members of the Khoisan Council that must be members of the PICC, but still following the proposal that it should be somebody that has undergone the practice. So in terms of functions, clause 15.2K, we're saying consideration must be given to include details about initiates taken to hospitals, not only for those who have died. In some cultures, an initiate is not buried in a normal funeral service, but in a private ceremony attended by men who are initiated. The females are shown the grave after the term of initiation school has expired. This culture was challenged on a variety of occasions successfully, but some are still hanging on it, and it is strongly suggested that the funeral should be in accordance with the custom and the family consent of the deceased initiate. When it comes to 15, subsection 7A, it is suggested that the initiation school to which the initiates from a closed school are transferred to must, as far as possible, conform to the culture of the transferred initiates. Clause 16.1b, in terms of technical support, the National House suggests the inclusion of the Department of Water and Sanitation, because we've seen that we always have problems when it comes to this issue, and the issue of water is becoming a very critical part when it comes to initiation. I think Unkosi Ungango Mhlaba, the former chairperson of the Eastern Cape, has always tried to explain the issue of water at initiation schools, where he would say that in the olden days, why they encouraged initiates not to take water was that in the main, they were always prepared for war. That, you know, as young male, most of them would be warriors or they will be soldiers of that community. So they would always go to war. They may go to war, there would not be water and all those. So they were prepared, they were always preparing them to become those warriors. But now, I mean, there is no war that we're going to fight anyway. You know, so why then deny these young boys water? You know, so, yeah, that's that. And in terms of 15, subsection 7A, it is suggested that the initiation school to which the initiate... Oh, no, so I think I went back, sorry. Clause 18.3b, that deals with government. So determination of fees. In doing so, consideration must be given to cultural variations that have an impact on the determination of the exact fees. In some cultures, e.g. Bapedi, in Limpopo, and the Amaxhosa in the Eastern Cape and Western Cape, the fees paid are inclusive of all costs, including food. Where else in other cultures, e.g. the Watsonga, the Wavenda, in Limpopo, while fees are paid, the families are responsible for providing food and on a daily basis to the initiates. So furthermore, in some cultures, the payment of initiation fees is split, some to the traditional leader who will have to make sure that there is proper monitoring in those initiation schools, and then some to a traditional doctor who has responsibility of sanctifying the area where the initiation will be taking place, and then the principal of the school who will be looking after those boys for a month as well. Sometimes parents would make a financial consideration to that person. All these need to be taken into consideration when determining appropriate fees. Cannot be a one-size-fits-all situation. It's also suggested that since MMC, medical male circumcision, is funded by government, consideration must be given by government to contribute to the funding of customer initiation. And this funding must cover some of the fees as well. As when one looks at the figures. You have over 100,000 boys that would go to initiation over, every year. And what government does, they would only fund those that have gone through MMC. So we are saying maybe consideration should be given towards funding those that are going to that are undergoing traditional circumcision. Clause 24, 2B, medical practitioners, the supervision of experienced traditional surgeons with good track records by medical doctors. It is sometimes not practical because of the number of doctors that we have in the country. So we are saying that provision must be made for traditional surgeons having adequate experience or having been under the supervision of another experienced traditional surgeon. It is suggested that instead that there should be training for traditional surgeons by the Department of Health. And we request that this training, Chair, it must also include the ability to analyze medical reports after screening. Because what we've seen is that we'd say pre-screening is compulsory. But when a traditional surgeon comes, he would not even look at that document. And that document would tell you something about the health of this boy. It may tell you that this boy is diabetic. And if he's diabetic, medical doctors would know what to do with that boy. So, but if the traditional surgeon cannot analyze, it makes it difficult because the other person might be HIV positive and the immune system would be low. So once that person undergoes any surgical procedure, you might end up losing that boy because his immune system is low. So we need to take that into consideration that it is a must do, Chair. Then consent, prohibition, and circumcision, clause 28, to in as much as this is provided for in the Children's Act, the following important point needs to be taken into consideration. In provinces or cultures where the age of admission to an initiation is 18 and above, that is exactly where deaths and injuries are occurring. In the best practice province in Limpopo, I've already spoken about this point, Chair, and I've gone at great length in terms of trying to give a proper explanation. So I would recommend, Chair, that we consider a lower minimum age depending on the culture and the area of those people that would be undergoing that initiation. I think the same reasons that I gave before, that you don't want to bring problems where there are no problems, especially in Limpopo. We pride ourselves with what is happening in Limpopo, and we wouldn't want to experience any problems. There's also another section in the Children's Act that we feel, Chair, that maybe we may propose for amendment whilst we cover those areas in this bill. The reality on the ground, especially in case that in Mpumalanga and Eastern Cape, is that thousands of young girls below 16 willingly agree to be tested for virginity in order to preserve themselves, as is in Tombinto, and to keep themselves safe from STIs and HIV. So the biggest gathering of virginity tested girls that goes over 30,000. It normally takes place in Gwanongoma. I think it's happening this weekend as well in Gwanongoma. People go there voluntarily, and even if we would want to intervene, people will still do it. So I think we need to see how do we amend this legislation, because I think it will not be practical to implement it as is. So, Chair, I think we've gone through. There are other clauses that we've also proposed. I'm not sure if my time still allows, Chair. I've gone on for some time. Clause 28, 6D, states that a traditional surgeon should be a registered medical practitioner or should be under the supervision of a registered medical practitioner if he or she is not registered a medical practitioner. So the regional house is against this clause. It will still go back to traditional surgeon with good track record and who is recommended by the traditional leader who is not a medical practitioner, but that person must undergo training by the Department of Health. In terms of offences, Chair, maybe before I even go to offences in terms of Clause 30, we are saying that there should be no reference to beer not being sold to initiate in the initiation schools, as this does not happen in the first place. It may perhaps be enough to say that no illegal activities should be allowed in initiation schools. This would include drugs, gangsterism, etc. So anything that is illegal, we must say that it should be prohibited, rather than being specific that that beer should not be sold, because this is these initiation schools are shebeens, or we've turned them into shebeens. So I think let us not go into specifics, because these specifics might give wrong impressions of what happens in initiation schools. In terms of clause 33 on offences, we're saying provision here must be made for initiates who break the law to also be punished as well by the law. So that must be covered, because we've always seen where initiates that are breaking the law, they would always find a space to escape the law, you know, because they are initiates or they've gone to initiation school. So we are saying if a person has to face the law, that person must be able to face the law irrespective of where that person is. Clause 29, 3, A and B states what should be included in the initiation teachings, and that the initiation teachings must be included in the curriculum. So we are proposing that that clause be scrapped, as no one can prescribe what should be taught at initiation schools. Chair, I think this will conclude our submission as the National House, but Chair, with your permission, I would request that maybe, Chair, if your time permits, that you allow my colleague from Limpopo just to highlight one or two areas that would assist us, Chair, in terms of best practices or any other point that he may want to talk to, if time permits, Chair.
Thank you very much, Nkosi Mahlangu, for the good presentation. I know that is a written submission will be given to a secretary for circulation for us, because I think it's very detailed, clause by clause, very helpful for us. We should do so.
Going forward, Chair, could we get written submissions in advance so that we can go through them and engage on them properly?
Well, that should have happened, but of course sometimes it's difficult to finalize everything. We are going to get it and move on and address some of the issues. I want to take a view, though, that because Mahlangu, what we should do is to allow members to pose questions and discuss with Amakhosi. And then Nkosi Dikgale will also assist us, Nkosi Ndevu and Amakhosi akhona, and take another 30 minutes just to discuss what we are presenting. Because if you allow Department of Education, Department of Art and Culture, we may miss some of the issues that we want to raise here in Amakhosi, not with our department. And to allow members of the parliament take our 30 minutes, have a discussion, because we may want to clarify some of the issues on your side to assist us to take it forward. And then we have identified many areas that you think are very problematic, and I think it would be important for members also to engage, and Honourable Deputy Minister, also you are free to engage as a member. Sincere, what do we do on this issue? Honourable Mteto.
Thank you, Chair.
I just want to know, Chair, the feeling of Amakhosi in terms of separating these two, the initiations and the initiation, and also the that the initiation be a school on its own, and also the circumcision be also be another thing, just to separate the two. What is your feeling, Madam?
Thanks, Chair. I have two questions. The first is with regard to the input that we received regarding the curriculum. If you have a look at Section 29.3, it says that initiation teachings may include. In other words, it doesn't prescribe what cannot be taught there. It says, here's what you can include, amongst other things. The second part of that is that it says that initiation teachings may not be prejudicial, biased, or discriminatory. Now, that's in terms of our constitution. We can't teach young men or young women or anyone for that matter to be prejudiced, biased, or discriminatory. Can I ask then what the problem is with this clause? Because you're saying we can't prescribe what must be taught. No one's saying what must be taught or what must not be taught. All we're saying is don't teach people prejudicial, discriminatory, or biased things. My second question, and this comes to what Honorable Mthethwa was saying, is the only part that we are trying to insert medical practitioners into is the actual surgery part. Now, we have heard evidence on a number of occasions of how traditional surgeons use the same implement without cleaning it for person after person after person. We've heard how there is no control or anesthetic or anything like that when these surgeries take place. We've heard how traditional surgeons who have been approved by the relevant traditional leader to conduct an initiation school in those areas end up either, I'm going to use a word that is quite severe, butchering certain young men, or those young people die because the surgeon himself is incompetent. And it may be a person who is 80, 90. There's a situation, I think it's in Alfred and Zor District Municipality, where a traditional surgeon who has been found guilty 3 or 4 times continues to perform the same act and children die. Young men die because of his actions. Now, surely it makes sense in those circumstances to ensure that when, and we're not talking about the entire initiation process, all we're talking about is the surgery itself. When the surgery takes place, it is either done by a qualified medical practitioner or a medical practitioner is present and observing. And I don't buy the argument that there are insufficient doctors. I really don't buy the argument that that's the case. But do you agree that the lives of our children are more important than whether or not the doctor himself is circumcised or has undergone initiation? Because it's not about the initiation at that point. All it is about the surgery, isn't it? I mean, all the initiation, there's weeks and weeks of initiation that happens outside of the actual surgery. All we're talking about is the act of surgery when that surgeon is there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, the Honorable the Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, the Honorable Amakhosi present, Inkosi Mahlangu and other Amakhosi. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. I thought initially when the Honorable Mailham was raising a point of order, was actually raising a point of order at Ingos, I was going to be very surprised. It was something else. It's unusual in our culture, but I know he was raising it to the chairperson, not from Ingos. We are unaware of your... we'll have to investigate it. Maybe is this traditional leadership, which Ingos said is bogus. So we must investigate that. Honorable Chair, I just want to begin on the on the bogusness of this traditional leadership that Ingos indicated that there are some traditional leaders issuing, illegal permits to people to conduct initiation. And I would like to get a clarity from Ingos if... In which part of the provinces, because in KZN, for example, we do initiation, but we don't have bogus traditional leaders there, so I'm surprised that there could be traditional leaders who are bogus, such that they have, they can issue, some permits. I'm quite very surprised. So if maybe you can assist us, because if there's something like that, obviously, there are parallel traditional structures in those areas. While the legitimate traditional leader is doing something correct, somebody else is actually spoiling everything, So we need to guard against that. And Chair, the last one is on the issue of the age. I agree with the presentation made by Ingos, and I think we should, because initiation is done in different ways. With other tribes, maybe it's just it is done once. With others, it's a process. In fact, until you become an old man, it doesn't happen once. There are people looking after you, until maybe you die, So. I think the issue of age will have to be considered in the bill, and see how best can we manage that. Chair, I just wanted to make that contribution, Chairperson, and then please investigate your.
Chair, sibingelela makhosi bengicela ukuthola iclarity. I just want to get a clarity, maybe an assistance, because some part of our country they don't recognize women, and I think we must remember that as honorable members who are inclusive, we've got men and women, so there are other part of the country that when we are meeting community in the purpose of this hearing, they don't recognize women. Then how do you balance that? And secondly, as honorables also, there are other parts of our country that before we conduct public hearings, we must be undergo initiation schools. Then I think as members of parliament, we must be undergo an initiation school before we introduce that topic to the certain particular community, because they don't accept if you didn't go the initiation school. Then how do we balance that in going forward? And also we coupled with the police that must attend cases in the initiation school. That particular or that individual police must be undergo an initiation school. Then how do you, because in your presentation, of course, I didn't hear covering that in detail. I just want to get a clarity so that in going forward, that should be a bill that is going to be accepted. That should be an act that is going to be accepted in this country. Thanks.
Nkosi Mahlangu, I heard you saying that traditional leaders, I think that is the old practice that whoever is going to run an initiation school must actually get permission from traditional leaders. Now the bill, as it stands, it says, it doesn't say so, it says that anybody who is of 40 years old and has gone through the same process is allowed to practice initiation. What is your view in this regard? Because the bill doesn't say what the House is saying, but it says that anybody 40 years and above that, this person must have been, you know, gone through that process of initiation, so circumcision, so to say. Why do you hold on to the fact that traditional leaders must issue permits, because it says permits must be issued by the health department? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Comrade Minister. From time to time, Deputy, you would intervene if you want to intervene also with question. But we have been interacting with Amakhosi for some time. I think now it's in course. But I want to raise this issue, of course, again, Nkosi Tikgale. Thank you very much for the reception accorded to us in Limpopo by Amakhosi. Express our gratitude to them because I think they understood the Constitution very well. Because what worries me, Nkosi Mahlangu, is when even Amakhosi are pressure into this culture is change. Once you go that route, it's a problem. And the culture doesn't change, remain the same. And then it just didn't work that way. I just think that in the Republic, we must be careful. Because when we lump Republic and Kingdom simultaneously, it's a bigger problem.
Yeah.
That would make it very difficult for future generation to engage. And then make it difficult also when there's... I'm just imagining if I'm a lady, I'm taken to a virginity test, therefore I'm discriminated because I didn't go there. We shouldn't promote something that is unconstitutional. The constitution of the country doesn't allow discrimination in whatever form. Not by religion, not by custom. Otherwise now it's on a say lobolwe. But how much lobolo should be paid throughout the country? And then I think it's a bigger problem, General Onda. And then I think intervention was about the failure of our traditional system in some part of the country to protect life. And then it's the duty of the state anywhere in the world to get involved in protecting. Otherwise, there's no need for a state if a state does not protect life of human beings. And no one is superior to the state and the constitution of the country. Because unless we are handling this thing correctly, and then who's on my course as a Kulumezi, Torubonte, Bonalan, Sesiali Malala. There's one board that makes laws, it's Parliament. There's no other board that is mandated in South Africa to make laws of the country except Parliament. Unless we interact in a manner that assists us to say, the intervention is precisely because of what happened, I think as we're saying that it can't be right. 60 young males disappeared, they died. We keep quiet under the cover of culture. Can never be right. And then, as we're saying that about, 34 workers, of course, unfortunately, also died. The entire international community raised an issue about that. Because life is equal. There's no inferior life and superior life. Life is equal, should be protected simultaneously by the state. And then, engagement with Amakhosi. What also I found it, though, very, very, very strange, and in fact, very encouraging at the same time.
i-participation yabo mama. And then in all public hearing anyway, women were participating fully. And also they expressed views about many issues amakhosi. And in fact it was very strange anyway. But abo mama, they were much more vigorous. I think it's very clear that the social fabric in a rural setup is changing. Therefore, we need one way or another to address some of these challenges, because abo mama there, they were absolutely there. And then I think Nkosi Ndevu was very helpful for us. Abo mama, they were there, they wanted to speak. Other males say, no, mama can't speak here, mama, it is our right to speak, we are South Africans too. I just think that one way or another, at the traditional side of things, we must try to address some of the issues in a manner that is very helpful for us on that. And because I think that, well, of course, I think education will come also to present to us. But what we are there about, because my thinking, comrade, Makosi, would you, if we call, there's one thing, people go to hospital for just a minor issue that worries us, for the surgery issue. And my initiation in other part of the country are done by families. If it's a family that tells you this tree means for this, this class means for this, cow means for this, it's a separate issue completely. And in other families, in fact, it's a very complex thing. But I don't know why is it difficult for us to have a common understanding for what exactly we are doing. Because it seems it's distorted, and then everyone interprets it the way you want to interpret it. You go to other areas, interpret it wrongly. You go to the Val, anyway, where it stopped now. They interpret it wrongly. You can just see what, if we don't, I'm saying that Amakhosi don't assist us to have a common understanding broadly about this custom of our people, I think we are losing it. And then we are losing it. But also, the emphasis also that worries me, the emphasis of tribalizing something that is common to South Africans, then becomes a tribalized thing generally. And this one is for, I'm not sure what Comrade Papele would be. This one is classically this, this one classically this. At a time when we are trying to build a cohesion in a nation that is called South Africa. Because unless we move beyond the limitation of tribal sentiment, we are not going to have a cohesion with society. And then I think Amakhosi can play a very important role in this era. But I'm very worried about when we interacted with many of them, that, hey man, we have a problem here. And then unless we engage, we have discussion, then we see what we do. We think also Controlessa is going to meet with us and have a discussion with them. And then, but one way or another, I think we have to address what are the issues. And then what are the issues? Because a custom like this shouldn't be broadly tribalized, generally. And then because we are drafting a law of general application. It's a law of general application. It's a South African law. It's not a Venda law, or Zulu law, or Tsonga law. It's a South African law. It's not, because unless we accept that we are drafting a law of general application for all South Africans, there will be some variation here and there. But we're not a drafting law for Khoisan. And then this one is for the Papeles, and this one will be for this clan. I just think that we are going to have a bigger problem. Because the issue is broader than just one area of work. If it was an issue that is practiced by two out of millions of people, it's a separate issue. But it's a common custom throughout the country. And it's a lot of people anyway, because even when we address it sometimes as this is only Africans who are doing it. Only Africans who are doing it. But knowing very well that there are also Jewish people, there are also Muslim people who do this. This is the issues. They may not even do the way we are doing that, doing their own ways. their children, they start becoming, I think then they're 12, they take them to manhood, all this thing. Of course, many South Africans are doing it. I think once you start then say this is a Dube culture, then it's a bigger problem. Because we fragment, we also promote discrimination as a result of that. And then I don't think how can it work in a man and a course that will assist us. The House of Traditional Leaders, we are more than we are expert on this area. And I know that I've been engaged with Inkos in the family village somewhere about some of these things. Just raising this issue because that worries me. We are all South Africans, generally. We speak many languages, many identities. We accept that. But I think that should be common in law. That is the law of South Africans. And then you know that anyway, there are a lot of people who are protesting about virginity testing. And a lot of things that are happening on some of these areas. Therefore, I think we must have a discussion with Amakos more than, I think, this, in my view, where we're trying to find a way of doing it in Kosumasa. But you can assist us to take some of the issues, because one issue that was raised, and Minister, that I think that was worrying about Mama Kakulu, Ingane Zibuya Entabeni Ziwes, gangsters, extremely discriminatory, respect for no one, and the other part of the country, then it causes a lot of havoc in that area. And then, in fact, gangsters, as a vile general, are very vicious gangsters. Also, out of this discrimination, and then people ended up grouping themselves, this group is this group, and this group is this group, and I think it's an issue that we should address. Nkosi we can assist us. And Nkosi Ndevu can assist us. And Nkosi Mahlangu can assist us and find some way to move. We are not going to exhaust every discussion in this meeting. But just to raise that one of the reasons, really, we said, let us go to community first before we meet with Amakhosi. Because when we engage in this level, we are also informed broadly. And then we engage in a situation with due respect and also diligent. And then that these are issues that are happening. This is what people are saying on the ground. Assist us here to shape these ideas here and there. That was a real issue. It was not because we wanted to undermine Contralles and Amakhosi, but was just to say, let's get the views of people. Then when we meet, at least we are at par about what is happening on the ground. You can then engage intelligently on some of the issues. Because Mahlangu wanted to take a point? Okay.
No. Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, honorable members, and Makhosi Wami, and the officials that are present in the meeting. I've been absent for a long time, so I'm catching up also, sitting here and listening. I think there are three issues that I just wanted also to emphasize, but also maybe get a comment from the House. One, I think we are moving from the premise that all members have been saying that we have a constitutional obligation and on the Bill of Rights, protection of life. That's the premise in which this law is coming in as an intervention tool by the state to protect the life. And I think we are all moving from the same premise. How then are we going to protect this life? And I think those are the details, and that goes into the legislation itself. There may be areas that are not satisfactory or satisfactory. Let's then highlight them, but with the view that we are here to protect life. It's a constitutional obligation, and it's a matter of Bill of Rights. Then on the second issue around the curriculum, I tend to agree with Honorable Melham that it's not prescriptive. It says may, and we're emphasizing to the traditional leadership sector that while these kids are there for weeks under your care, you have cultural values that you teach. there are also certain manhood values that you teach on them, and we're not prescribing them. But we then say add to that Ubuntu philosophy, add to that patriotism, add to that social cohesion, add to that nation building, so that they, when they come back, they can be contributors of all these things in the societies that they come from or from the communities that they come from. So the curriculum, therefore, is then not to prescribe, but to say you can then pick up on those issues and add them, and then so that then by the time they go, they know they are South Africans of diversity. They are there to respect life. They are there to respect women. They are there to respect children. All those elements then be included. Ubuntu then anchors all those particular issues of the values of Lona. But your cultural value as Maboni, Bapedi, Mandebele, then those will live to you because you are the best custodians of those particular cultural values. We can't prescribe. You know them. And therefore, the issue of may include in the curriculum was that. But also Nkosi Matanzima, Ngango Mhlaba, has always been emphasizing it in all the meetings that I've gone to the Eastern Cape with. The curriculum is no longer being taught in the schools. People just go in for that surgical, and then they are then there for healing. No one is teaching them. They'll be there idling, and then the next they get released home. But in themselves, obviously, they come raw, they come back worse. Instead of an intervention, schools must be seen as intervention programs which begins to add values that we want to see in those boys when they become men. And then I think that I'm not sure how the curriculum element was then discussed and then got rejected, but if we could really begin to look at an element, not prescribing it in the law, we can't prescribe it in the law, but we emphasize as an important tool that ought to be reinstated back into the school, because it used to be there. And then when you go to Gauteng, there's nothing of that sort that has been done. And that was the what we discovered when we were intervening in Gauteng, why we emphasize the curriculum. Then the last one is what the chair was saying, that culture is not static. Culture evolves with the society as it modernizes itself. You also develop and evolve with that society. Otherwise, if culture was static, we will not be wearing suits and ties today. We will still be wearing amabeju coming to the meetings here. We will not be driving cars. We will be still using the donkey and the cart from Johannesburg coming down to Cape Town, because we are aesthetic. But culture evolves, and culture alone. And I'm not sure in prevention life, and the main issue is in the surgical environment, that we ought to also begin to pay attention. I'm not going to be prescribing what should happen, but during Stone Age, before the discovery of iron, during the stone, you could just imagine what tool was used for circumcision. Stone. And then the steel was discovered. Culture didn't remain with stone. It evolved to iron. And then the spear was then developed, or as a guy or whatever form of tool. Now we are now in a new technology era, the fourth industrial revolution. There may be new tools that are now available for society that can even prevent and save lives. So we ought to be as adaptive, because that element is just constitute 10% of why children are there. 90% is initiation. And that 90% needs this particular curriculum, but their life gets lost in the 10%. It doesn't get lost in the 90%. So if that issue could also be looked at, culture ought to evolve, and culture must be adaptive and then to take us forward as a nation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Attention, sharing views.
Yeah. Thank you very much, the chairperson. Yeah. Thank you very much, Chairperson of the session, honorable members, my chairperson of the National House of Traditional Leaders and traditional leaders who are with us today. It's really important that we cooperate in making sure that we have a law that will, at the end of the day, help us save the lives and be able to keep this culture that is so important to us. But I must say, problems in the initiation school don't start right in the initiation school. They start before you can even go to the initiation school. If you don't plan this initiation school, how you are going to have it, then definitely you are planning to fail. What we do in Limpopo, before we can have an initiation school, we make sure that we talk to traditional leaders. And we make sure that these traditional leaders are the ones who will be responsible for the initiation school. We don't just say anybody. If we say anybody, then even a 24-year-old will come and say, I'm responsible for the initiation school, mainly to go and make money. And in that way, we definitely have problems. And that is why we are saying traditional leaders themselves. Because you remember, a traditional leader can only be a traditional leader in council. With him and all the Bahoma will make sure that they are the ones who will be responsible for this initiation school. And that is why we don't want the Mizanela people who can just come from anywhere to come and say, we can also make money out of this culture. When we talk about age, this, to us, age is important because we can take a child of 12 years and upwards. People at the age of 60 do come for initiation school to come and be initiates. And in that way, at that age, we obviously cannot mix the person of 60 years with the young ones of 12. We'll definitely have to devise a means of separating the group. But at the age of 12, to us, is very important. And not mainly for circumcision. Even if we can check our report that I've given out, we don't talk much about circumcision. We talk about the control at the initiation school. Because that's where, to us, it's important. If we are saying we want a person of 12 years, we know at the age of 12, we are able to control these kids. We are able to give them laws. We are able to say to them, you don't do this at this time. You do this after this time. But if they are at the age of 40, 30, it becomes very difficult. At the age of 18, I can tell you, these people still, they need to smoke. They want to sell beer at the initiation school. How do you control them? Because they want to drink beer. They want to go for ladies and girls. They want to have cell phones and talk about chatting and all those things. You are not able to control them at that age. And that is why I encourage people to say, let's take the age of 12. In our province, before the 2018 initiation schools, some said, no, let's even admit kids at the age of 6. We said, no, we can't go that far. Because a person at the age of 12, at the age of 6, 7, still needs the mother to put at the back. No, you can't take a child to initiation school. No, we can't do that. But at the age of 12, that person have a certain understanding. He's not yet an adult. He's on track to adulthood, but has that level of understanding. And that is why we still encourage even other provinces to say, let's take 12 as a minimum age. 12, 13, 14 as a minimum age. I've given out the report. In our report, only 2018, we had more than 45,000 initiates. And we only had one person hospitalized because of sugar diabetes and related illnesses. Only one person. And we were able to control them because at that age of 12, we are in control. We are parents. They understand. These kids understand We are here with parents who love us, who want to control us, who want to lead us to somewhere. But at the age of 18 and more, who expect problems there. One of the things that to us is important is that when we plan this initiation, we say the police must come. Unfortunately, we say only those who are graduates, because they can help us at any level. We don't just say they must come and be at the initiation school because we want them to arrest somebody. No. They can also help us at any level. Medical doctors can also help us at any level. They come to the initiation school. An initiation school is an extended type of a family. In a family, we have about 4 or 5 people. But at the initiation school, sometimes you find that you have more than 1,000 initiates. In our case, in the Khale, sometimes when we have initiates in school, you find that we have about 1,800 initiates. It's a big number. And in that way, you feel these people must understand what you want to achieve. They must understand what you want to achieve. If you have a medical doctor, the medical doctor is only there, is not only there for circumcision or to check if these people are healing or what, as the other report is saying. No. Again, this is a family. If a person is having another type of an illness, the medical doctor will be able to say, this person needs to be checked. If the person needs to go to hospital to be checked, to have an injection of some kind, then the medical doctor will obviously help you. But our inanga may not be able to see that this person needs to be checked. And that is what, if you can say medical doctors mustn't be at the initiation school, then I can tell you are going to get it wrong. There you are going to get it wrong. There you'll get it wrong. But those who are graduates do help. The police who are graduates do help. The Department of Health has also the native inyangas. They do come and help. Sometimes you find that some of the groups will talk about witchcraft, and so that's when these inyangas do come and help. And that is why we must have a team of all these people, including screening of the initiate before they go for initiation schools, including that. And that really has helped us to achieve what we have done as a province. Even if I'm saying there are other challenges that we are fighting, and then we are making sure that these challenges don't just come and spoil, like a person where a situation where you find people just want to have an initiation school, even if they don't have a permit. It's important to have a permit. If we, for you to have a permit, we say, do you have land where you're going to have this initiation school? Do you have land? Do you have a proclamation for this land? Do you have a title deed for this land? Did the environmental specialist come to check the environment? Because a person can say, we're going to have an initiation school, only to find that they're going to have it in a river. And when rain comes, what happens? If it comes during the night, what happens? Because it sometimes happens that you have a rain during initiation period. So it's important that we get these advices. And a specialist can help and say, no, I think this is not a good area. I think these shrubs are not, cannot be good for initiation school. It's better that we relocate and go to another area. So I think with all those makes us a team. But lastly, Jefferson, initiation is for both women and men. When I came in here, I thought the committee says it's only for men. I said, oh, okay, no. I thought it's only for men, because when I checked, I thought they said no, because traditional leaders are coming, they only want men to come and talk about initiation. Well, in our area, in the province as a whole, there are times when after initiation, the initiates need to be attended to by women. There are those times, because we have different ethnic groups, the gender group, they know the role of women in the initiation school. Well, it's just unfortunate that you go to some areas and then they say, no, we don't want women here, and then they collapse the meeting. So it's just unfortunate. And I'm happy that it did not happen in Limpopo, because I would be very much worried by now. So, but it don't happen with us, and were able to conduct the hearing without any problem. But the requirements before initiation schools can start are really very much important. That those requirements should be met. For us, a person of 24 years definitely is a no-no. Cannot have an initiation school, because traditional leaders must control. The traditional leader will say, this one cannot have an initiation school in our area. Only an old person can have an initiation. Otherwise, we are just going to fail. And then people will die and will come and say, what do we do after we have encountered some death? My plea is, maybe we can increase the number of days at the initiation schools. Maybe we can increase the number of days, because June holidays, we have about 3 weeks. And with us, with the arrangement, of course, with the Department of Health, the Department of Health and the Education, we increase the 3 weeks to 4 weeks. And there are some people who still say, we want about 6 weeks. We say, no, with 6 weeks, then we can maybe compromise and sacrifice to get another week before schools reopen, or during, before the schools can close. And then find that we have about 5 weeks of initiation. And we have discovered that December has a lot of weeks where maybe we can take another week and put it in June, so that we can have an extended period for initiation. Well, those are some of the ideas maybe that can be checked and have an engagement on. Thank you very much.
No, thanks, Chair, and thanks, Khoshi Dikhale. Maybe, Chair, I think as a sector, I think we are the first ones to say culture is dynamic. And we believe that the culture that we are custodians of, we've always said it does not belong to traditional leaders, but it belongs to those communities. And if it has to change, the change has to be driven by those communities. I think that's what we believe in, and that's how we normally conduct our programs. The presentation that I was making is informed by what comes from provinces. I have different views as a chairperson, but my views are not as important as what one has, because in part of the 12-point plan, I was one of those that developed the 12-point plan. And one of the key elements is the issue of curriculum that one had put in to that plan. But I think the reports that were coming from the provinces, this is what they were saying. And I had to express what I've been sent here to express by provinces. And also, Chair, with from even before it became policy, I think we've always been the ones that were advocating for the legislation. When the policy was crafted from conceptualization stage, as traditional leaders, we were fully party to conceptualizing this legislation. So we wanted this legislation that we have today, because we wanted this legislation to assist us. And we also believe that one of our models is that we are united in diversity as the house. So we believe that as much as there are different tribes, there are different cultures, but we are one. We are one as a country. But we have to respect those differences that are there in different cultures. We can't really play them down or think that they may not be important, because I think once we start not thinking that they are important, I think some of us might not be allowed to go back to our own villages and our own areas. I think we need to be aware that people still believe, within, I am a South African, but before I'm a South African, I am also Ndebele, and this is what we do as Ndebeles. But these are things that bring us together as South Africans. And I think we are all for that. And I agree with what the Deputy Minister had said, that even Nkosi Mathanzima has always spoken about the issue of curriculum. You know, that we are slowly losing the value of this. And I think when I was making my own inputs earlier, I said in initiation, that's where parents are supposed to be and instill the values that they need to instill. So, because it's talking to this curriculum, but I didn't want to go direct and show that I take another view. But it was something that I was throwing into the table that we need to look at. You know, we don't believe in discrimination, but you sometimes have qualifications in anything that you do, and I believe that we sometimes have to respect. I don't think for you to be an MP, you have to go through a certain process for you to become an MP, and I think not anyone will be an MP, and would not call it discrimination if one cannot come and claim to be an MP, because there's a certain qualification that you must have, and I think we need to be alive to that, you know, that it happens that we have to go through certain things to qualify. And I think the chair of Limpopo was very eloquent in terms of trying to put these pieces of the puzzle together to show that we are one, we need each other, we need... But for you to be able to make a better contribution, sometimes it helps if you've gone through that initiation, because you're part of that family, you are able to assist. And I've learned a lot as well from him when he was speaking, that, you know, there's so many things that we are doing wrong, and these are things that we need to learn from Limpopo. Because we are very, in Mpumalanga we are lucky because we are closer to Limpopo. And so there is a lot of sharing of information in terms of what we do and the knowledge that that is there. And we are gaining a lot. The unfortunate province is the Eastern Cape, that is far from us. And they are unable to benefit from that. Because when you go to the Eastern Cape, I remember I was with the DM, and what was said was, if you are a politician and you say medical doctors must come in here, you will lose elections. It was what was said. So it means that, and I remember there was a very intelligent girl that was doing MMC, The National Research Council was trying to bring MMC to the Eastern Cape, and I think even traditional leaders and other people said, you know what, Ntombam, you are very good at what you do, but you said you were born here, but you are doing it in Cape Town. Stay there, it is welcome there, but not this side. You know, and it is a challenge that we are facing there, and I think until we can break that wall, I've been pleading to traditional leaders in the Eastern Cape that I think at some stage we need to take leadership and be the ones that are championing this change, because if the community is not
championing the cultural change, then well, now you can start talking about it. You break the stereotypes, break this thing that says you can't have medical doctors coming into the play. Because what we've seen in the Eastern Cape, unfortunately, those that would die, and Nkosindevu can attest to this. It's an observation that I've made because I always go there. That those that die in the main are those that have gone through medical male circumcision. You know, they've gone through medical male circumcision, and during initiation, they come this side, they are the ones that die in the main. And I believe that they are killed sometimes because of the way they would be treated, the way they would... So it's something that happens. I know maybe I might be rebuked for saying it, but that's the observation that I've made personally, that if you ask them, with the, you know, these people that have died, that they've gone for, you find that most of them have gone to MMC, and then they went to initiation. And unfortunately, they would die. And it is the communities, it is the parents. So people are involved. And so we, it's a situation that all of us need to come closer to. And I think us as traditional leaders, we are hoping that this legislation, and I was worried, I thought it covers that. When Tate Masepe was raising it, it doesn't say traditional leaders must give that permission. Because in Limpopo, if you give a permission, you also take accountability of the lives of those people there. You know, that should there be a death, you as a traditional leader, you must take accountability for what happens there. So it gives you an obligation to seriously monitor what is happening there. You know, to keep your eyes closed, you must just be on a close call. You must be there on a daily basis. I mean, even myself, when there's initiation, I get reports on a daily basis. I go to every school. You can't be sleeping during that period of time, you know, so because you need to come closer to what is happening there. So I think once this legislation is there, it should force even traditional leaders in the Eastern Cape, because I think it will finally make people take, you know, to take responsibility of what is happening in their own villages. the issue of Boga's traditional leaders, Mpumalanga and Limpopo, it is rife there. And Gauteng, yes. There is a person calling himself Mukangwe in Mpumalanga. He calls himself sometimes Khosi or King Mukangwe. Even the deaths that happened in Mpumalanga this year, they are from those schools. He would give 80 or so permits in 1 year, and they pay him for those permits. We report it, you go to the police, nothing happens. He even installs headmen in your own areas, and they start cutting sides, and you go and complain to COGTA, to the police, and no one really takes action. I think it is only now, I think when we went to the minister in Mpumalanga last week, the MEC said they finally decided to take legal action against this person. You know, in Limpopo, it's troubling them because it's giving permits.
Same person.
Yes, same person. You know, it's giving permits to everybody there. It's a cross-border show. You know, in my area, I think I have about 4 headmen. But, you know, they give permits for initiation. I'm sharing the house, but I'm helpless as well in that situation because the police and no one, the Department of COGTA, they can't help. No one can help you. So it's a serious problem. And that's not the only problem. There's many. Kunabo Mulefe, King Mulefe in Gauteng that is busy doing that. Yes, he calls himself King Mulefe. And he's installing traditional leaders. He's giving permissions. So those people are there. You know, and that's sometimes recognized by government as well. You know, you find that there, when you go to a government function, he's there, he's the main speaker, you know, in a government function. And yes, and we say, but this department is supposed to be working with us as traditional leaders. You go to the CRL, you find the very same people there at CRL, and they are the ones that are having a greater voice there than you. And Because, you know, when a person is bogus, he will try to legitimize himself. He'll always have a very big group of people that will come with him. You know, so that you're intimidated and you think, you know, I will come, they will recognize this one, and then when you are legitimate, they don't recognize you. You know, and that's the problem that we are experiencing as a sector. You know, so of which I think we need to deal with. In terms of objects that are used by traditional surgeons and all those, I think in the main, a lot of areas have passed through that stage. As I said, that the sector has transformed. There would be very few areas where you find that there is one object that is used, unless if that in that community the traditional leader there is not recognized. But if it is a legal school and recognized, you'll not find one object that is used everywhere for one person, and all those things are not happening anymore. So medical doctors are very key in the sector, and it's what we are trying to preach, that in the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape, please, medical doctors must play a critical role. I think that's that. And then, yeah, on the issue of, I think, you know, that has been stated by Ubaba Melem. I think I did talk about curriculum a bit. Look, our teachings in the main, in those schools, we are not teaching people to be biased and discriminatory. As Khoshi was saying, you know, people come, at some of the ages, they come with preconceived ideas of what should be happening, and I think I would agree with some of the proposals that Khoshi is proposing that we maybe have to look at, you know, because I think some of the teachings are already there, coming from the society, and yet yes, there are gangsterism schools that have been identified in other areas that we need to deal with. But we said where there is criminality, it must be dealt with and be looked at as a criminal thing. You know, it can't be looked at as a cultural thing. It's not. It has nothing to do with culture. It is just a criminal in terms of separating initiation and circumcision. It's a very difficult one. I think we, with the provinces that are that have come up with interventions, the system is working well. I think it is only where, you know, provinces have not accepted in terms of how do we change the culture to include the other professional medical practitioners that are supposed to participate, but who would want everything to happen within once, but in, you know, bringing the medical practitioners as well as part of us to be able to assist each other, you know. So that's, yeah, that would be our submission, Chair. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much, Makosi, for presentation. And then we'll have our two departments also making some presentation. But the House of Traditional Leaders are still going to be engaging until we fine-tune the bill to ensure that broadly cover the South African society as a whole, with certain variation here and there, and that will assist us then to ensure that there's a little bit way of doing things correctly. Thank you for this presentation. It's very helpful for us, and we can then have a discussion. And then, of course, we are going to be meeting again and sitting down and seeing clause by clause ourselves, but we can engage because Mahlangu Dikgale and Nkosi Undevu for us again to take this forward. But it's very helpful. And we hope also we are going to meet with the Contralesa colleagues also, have a discussion with them, because meeting and having discussion assists all of us anyway to address the issue that is there, that is before us. And thank you very much for your presentation. We'll move to education. What are the issues on education? What are the issues on art and culture? Education, what do you want us to do? I thought education is easy. You want to use the we need a summary, really. What are the big summary on this issue? As far as education, I think Inkosi goes clause by clause nicer. On your side, I don't think you want to go clause by clause, because education is concerned with specific issues that you want to raise with us. Okay. Let us hear what education wants us to do.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the traditional leaders, the honorable members that are here, and colleagues. I was hoping that the Deputy Minister would be here so that to the Chairperson and the Deputy Minister could indicate that at least whilst I'm an official, because of sharing a name, being a namesake to the Minister, I might be addressed as Honourable Member, maybe for the part of the session. We are indicating from education that there are all three areas. The mandate, which is generally well known in very specific terms, we will not go into the detail to that. We make reflections to the bill, and that's not clause by clause, Chairperson. And then within that, we are just saying, emphasizing matters of agreement and matters that require strengthening. And then we make our recommendations. We are indicating that we appreciate the bill. It has addressed a number of areas, because as education, we participated during the drafting of the policy process. We were consulted, and then we worked with COPTA at that stage when the policy was being developed. And we appreciate that when we read the policy inputs and we looked into the bill, a number of areas were taken care of. And then we are also indicating that the House would appreciate that the Minister of Basic Education, within the population and the cohort we are speaking to, it really impacts highly on education. We have 12 million learners that are constituting basic education, 26,567 schools across the country, which means we constitute about one-third of the South African population. Our children are the ones. And therefore, if you talk about the activities of the nation kind of business like this, it is given, Chairperson, that that population resides with the Minister of Basic Education. We addressed our matter around the question of school safety as education in terms of the Bill of Rights and the Constitution that would speak particularly to the area we're discussing today. And we are saying we appreciate that provincial initiation coordinating committees are in place, which makes the presence of a basic education to be better expressed. We realize in the bill that you also establish the steering committees, wherein, again, the department is listed as one of the supporting departments. So we're presenting to the House that, indeed, as when the Act gets to be implemented, if it goes in the spirit of the terms that are provided here, education will make its input at those different levels in terms of support and administration, as the Premier will make a determination in establishing that structure. We quickly also appreciated the question of expression on the question of the age. We're happy as education to say the regulation of age to 18, as we're reading it from the bill, resonates with our space of pedagogy, believing that from the education perspective, education has played its formal role and developed this child to a certain degree, that when our customary kicks in, it doesn't find a baseless citizen. It finds someone who has already been. It will be learners between your grade 10 to 12, if you say 18, if you check that cohort. And that is the point at which, one, at a school level, they have made subject choices as to whether they are going commercial, they are going science, they are going human and social sciences and so on. They have made the choice already at that stage when they are grade 10. As they go to grade 12, you are finding citizens that are ready to make choices at that stage. We also appreciated the reference to the timetable of scheduling, that it will not hamper the school timetable. However, we wanted to emphasize that it could be ideal if we speak to the House to say there is a cohort of grade 12s that is not free during your June holidays in the present setup. A number of schools really call for retreats. It's the time when, because it is half year, schools have made an assessment, majority of schools, especially our formerly disadvantaged schools, that the camping has become so helpful. We are not saying it is the norm that we should organize around the nature of the current setup. There are so many disturbances to schooling that we confront with throughout the year. The service protests that have now targeted schooling have become a sore point to us. And the only way the ministry has been able to intervene is that most of the time, where there has been curriculum interruptions, our June holidays for the NCS examination has become our point of intervention. So we're saying, not that they can be excluded, but we're saying if consideration could be made that that cohort of learners who are doing grade 12, if it could be the one in terms of the planning that Hoshi was talking to, would be maybe preferred for end of the year, that they be the December cohort in part of the planning, if that could also include that factor that you sort of protect the grade 12 learners, it could help, because it is a very critical period. Parents have invested 15 years to 13 years of schooling. At that point, the learners are disrupted. The other point we were raising is that there is a cause for concern that the clause that refers to elements of discipline in the schools, which we cannot prescribe, as we say, there is no prescription. The Constitution prohibits corporal punishment with our schooling system and any other. So if they are the similar learners who are your school learning, if any other form of discipline would then be agreed to, but it then includes the corporal punishment, then the Constitution again is also being breached in that regard, because we do not know what disciplinary measures are referred to in one of the clauses that you speak to, that we would say it would have been encouraging to us that your clause, your section 15C speaking to 21B could help us that they be sort of strengthened when referring to matters of discipline, that it could be taken light in the initiation school that maybe giving lashes and corporal punishment might be mild when the same kind of cohort is protected at the school level. There is a development in the Eastern Cape that would want to indicate, and in some other small areas, that when initiates are well back at school, they do want to have, if they find themselves as a common grouping, they do want to hold informal imbizos, and they disrupt schooling. And we have had those reports in some districts that there are sessions where they say they should be allowed to have imbizos that are also really a distraction. On the last slide, we are responding to a lot of matters then that have been referred to here. My last slide there is the area that I would want to make an emphasis. It's an area where referring to the curriculum that has been discussed in the House. If the House Chairperson could note, and the leadership, the honorable members and traditional leaders, that the Department of Basic Education offers life orientation, and one of the areas in life orientation in grade 10 to 12 is indigenous knowledge systems. Indeed, we will not be able to prescribe to the House here, but we're talking about any form of collaboration. If you were to collaborate with the police, collaborate with the medical practitioners, it would not be out of order to collaborate with educators selected who could assist in terms of the knowledge, the indigenous knowledge systems that we already have in the curriculum that deal with areas that the Deputy Minister made a serious reference to. We are currently strengthening and talking about the decolonization of curriculum. And if we are talking about that aspect, we are trying to infuse it back into our knowledge systems. And to do that will require that there is a seamless flow in whatever platform where learning obtains. If we refer to the question of cognitive competences, question of virtue, appreciation of knowledge, economic development and discipline, these are components of life orientation that are already embedded in curriculum. The fourth industrial revolution and artificial intelligence is with us. And we would like our culture in terms of its evolution to also reflect that it is moving with the times. So we're available. That's why basic education says in the invitation and structures that shall be formed going down, we want to get the sense as to Amakhosi finding some kind of a reason to establish a means of collaboration with Basuwe. How can your formal schooling educator, Leba Suwe, in your schooling, find kind of harmonization of that transition, that even when learners have gone to initiation, you don't have something what you can call a gap. There is some kind of fusion that shows continuum. Their going and coming should not be any kind of a disruption. It should be more than welcome to say they would be assisting, because we know that educators would not be worried in some emphasis of areas. They've been taught some leadership skills. When they come from the initiation schools, our assumption would have been that is where we're going to pick up leadership from, rather than they be a burden to school in terms of discipline. Because that's what teachers complain about. They say they don't want to take instructions. They can't be instructed. The last part is, in some areas, there's a bit of a transition towards their dress code, that when they come back, they don't fall back immediately into the uniform if it is a prescribed for the school. There is a period that says they should be allowed to be in a different dress code. That then makes them to be different from others, and you don't want that. You want them to be part of the rest of the team. So we there are dynamics that educators say, can the minister assist? Can the minister provide support in a manner that, as Africans in Africa, we are not in conflict with ourselves? Because when the educators then instill discipline, their conflict is about, we are now different. And that is the input, Chips.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, let us engage on the input and very helpful identifying issues. Minister, Deputy.
Thank you, Chair. Well, on the presentation made by the gentleman that side, in some things I agree with him. for example, I remember I was in a certain section of Umalang, I'm not sure whether I'll call it fine, where there is a big Eskom, that side of next to Pretoria, that side of Umalang. We're in the oversight there, and principals complained that there was something called Ingoma or something. And I think it took long such that, you know, learners will not go to school because they must attend that, and it's valuable. Baumtagane, just like when the king of the Zulus summoned all the Zulus, we all leave parliament as Zulus. So parliament becomes less important, you see. Now you are now a mixture. So you can't leave. So you see, so I don't know really what can be done, you know, to balance the two. Because I would believe that to that community, Ingoma is something, I think that is more than education. To the education is second, because, you know, it is them, you know, they feel this thing. So principals were actually complaining about that. So I think it's a valid point, and I'm happy that you raised it. Yeah, so I don't know what can be done, and I'm glad that the Honorable Nkosi Mahlangu is coming from inside the Zulu province. So I believe that something must be done, because really it does, you know, have an impact on schooling. And the issue of uniforms, you know, when they are, I think, 3 weeks or whatever, when they come from these activities, they have a style on how they should wear. I don't know whether they should, it's because they should protect some certain parts or what, I don't know, I don't understand. But I know that it happens, you know. But there is somewhere where I don't agree. Because we are engaging. You know, these, if it's our culture that always in June we go for initiation, then we know that every year for the rest of our life, for as long as this community exists, June is our month. Planning in the community goes that way. So it can't be, you know, disturbed by the fact that there was a service delivery protest and learners must not, because we must catch up, because we don't plan service delivery protest. They just come because of circumstances, you know. So I don't know, maybe what we can recommend is that, Chair, instead of saying that the cultural activities of the community will be disturbed because learners must go there, what we can say is that maybe we negotiate with communities, if it is possible, to say those who are not part of the initiation process because they had to be at school, is there something that could be organized maybe in December, rather than saying they should not go to the to practice their culture, and there is no other chance given to them. Maybe I would agree if we can, you know, sort of find, you know, something like that, you know. But I'm afraid if we, because it will happen like the area I'm talking about, that they'll tell you that no, you can go ahead with your education. We must undergo this culture, even though they will not put it that way. But you will see, because learners will not go to school, they will prioritize this one because they know maybe it is the first and the last. They will never get it because in some instances it's like that. Thank you, Chair.
No. So thanks for the input from the Department of Basic Education. I think on page 5, the first 3 bullets, you are raising fundamental issues there, which when looking at them, they might not have a greater expression in the bill that as the committee and parliament considers the bill, we'll have to look at that. And Chair, based on that also, to invite SALGA as another stakeholder to come in there around some of the bullets there, I mean, spaces for slaughtering and initiation practices in the urban nodes. When we look at Gauteng is increasingly a participant on initiations now. We can no longer ignore it. The wrong things will have to deal with them, but obviously the practice will then come back. But where are the spaces? There will not be any space. Then they'll go to mine dams, they'll go to abandoned factories, as is the case. are forcing people now to use anything that is in their imagination. And but if you create spaces, then you are able to know where they are and what they are doing and who is running in that particular way. And then, but the issue of the permission, in the rural areas where there is Inkosi, is doable. That Inkosi should. But in the urban areas, we didn't speak with, in Polokwane, where there's no traditional leader, probably, since there are certain spots or areas, what do you do in Sishio? What do you do in Mangueng? Mangueng might be in the jurisdiction of Khosi Mamam, but Mangueng is urbanized to a level where it's a mixed community. It's no longer the people of Khosi Mamam because of the university. Now, who should then be given permission there? And as you were responding, I didn't hear how then do we begin to deal with the urban nodes for permission. Should it be the mayor, speaker, or council, or some desk being established in the municipalities? We might then have to look at that particular environment too. And then who are these people who are the applicants? Should they be related to the national groups that they come from? With some kind of a letter acknowledging that when I go only, you will then be doing this or not. So I think that's the area that it's absent. And the last is the calendar basic education also. We had a situation in Mpumalanga, and Gosumahlangu knows about it. The girl initiations. It takes for 2 to 3 months. They go in June, they come out end of August and September, they only go back to school. And then the family was in touch with us, worried also about the education of the girl. And we couldn't go in and rescue the girls at that time, because the girls resisted to say the person who was initiating them, the woman, had told them that if any one of you goes, you are going to die before you finish your initiation, because bad luck is going to follow you. And so the girls resisted and said, no, if you take me out, then it means I'm going to die. So I must just start what I've started and then until to the end. So it's a stereo element that has been infused in them. Now, we then followed up with the school after they were released. They said, no, they usually have these circumstances occurring in most of the Mpumalanga schools. And they will then make catch-up programs for this after school every day. They will remain behind and then to do a catch-up. But then they passed well after that. So is it a national norm or is that specific to Mpumalanga? And I'm not sure how would want maybe the law to express itself around. And I know Khosi Dikgale has said 4 weeks or to 5 weeks, it's maximally what they require for boys. But for the girls, it can be that 2 months and 3 months. I'm not sure how we would want to regulate that in the law. So that even if you add 4 to 5 weeks, I know the other provinces are creative. As soon as you finish writing, the last subject you write, you go. Schools will be 2 weeks running. But there's nothing happening because you have just finished writing June exams. So you can take that 1 week or 2 weeks before school closes, and then you can then add to the period of law. But when schools open, everybody must be back to school so that education becomes an emphasis and is very important. But after finishing the exams, I think you could then look at the calendar of the school when exams are finishing, and then that's the period when you can then say, go in, those who are going to initiation, you can start now, so that they have more extra time. And your curriculum teaching can also have space in that particular environment. But I'm not sure there's a national norm of allowing it and then only having catch-ups and how we can regulate it in the bill, if you could maybe share a view also. Thank you very much.
You see, the problem here is very big, because the act says within the jurisdiction of a traditional leader, a traditional leader is the one who gives permission. That's what the act is saying. The bill. No, not the bill. But traditional leaders are saying, in terms of their provincial, what you call a policy, that it is the traditional leader who says who should and who should not. Now, there is already conflict between members of the inner circle. The coach is there, he's got, like you said, when you presented that it is the Koshi and members of the inner circle, Makomana. Now, the problem is, some of Makoshis, they give permission to people who will in turn give them cash flowing from their the number of initiates who have gone through the process. Now, in the urban areas, people voluntarily, they go out and practice this thing, and there is no control over them. But out in the rural areas, Bakomana, their complaint is that our leaders give the right to practice this thing to people who are not supposed to be doing it. And I'm aware also, Hoshi from Pehi, that Mahoshi themselves, they are also divided over who should actually be doing this thing. Because there is also a complaint from some of Mahoshis that if you come in as a provincial leader, regional, call them regional house of traditional leaders, you would give permission to people who are not supposed to be given that permission, and you would actually not give to the people who are members of the Makomana. That is a complaint. That is a complaint, because now everybody is going to want to do the practice, because you are subjective in handing out permission to people who want to do the practice. That is the problem. That is why I deliberately posed the question as to how are you going to go around the issue of the bill which says 40 years and a person must have gone through the process of initiation or circumcision, whatever. How are you going to circumvent that one? Because if the bill says 40 years and you must have gone through that one, how are you, because the bill will actually be preceding whatever provincial legislations you have, how are you going to solve that one? Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. Mine is to get an understanding from the education that how deep it is, this problem, because in especially in the Eastern Cape, we learn that most of these initiate, when they come back, sometimes they don't want to be taught by teachers who have not gone through the schools, and sometimes they don't want even to share toilets with those that have not even gone there. These are the issues that they were raising, and sometimes they don't even want to be taught by females teachers. They start to misbehave. Others, when they're very good boys, but when they come back, they misbehave in such a manner that they even disrespect their fathers at home. They said, if the father has not gone there and now I can't be taught by you, I'm a man now. But I want to know about the school. How deep it is, this problem?
Thank you, Chair. We have indicated in one of the slides that could be circulating about the questions of ill discipline, just broadly across the system. It will be slide number five. That the slide number six. Because I've outlined that, at least because the system is huge, you do have the foundation phase, the intermediate phase. We only would be sort of practically talking about the FET phase, those schools that would be what we call senior secondaries in the old concept, where there are grade 10 to 12. That is the cohort. But when you go to the north, like Abu Limpopo, you'll get what you call those that are at the intersen, those that are, you're doing your grade 6 and 7. The umntana wenza u grade 8, if u progress accordingly, my grade 8 will be 13 years exactly. And Chairperson, if it allows, I want to come back to that matter of age. Umntana wenza u grade 8 will be exactly 13, u grade 8 and 9, which is the old standard 6 and 7. So they are not part of your big cohort that makes, because primary schools are more than the secondary schools by their number. So why there are problems of ill discipline, they are not impacting the education system heavily because of the number, because you will find it at secondary schools. It's a problem, and it's a problem across the number of provinces, where initiates, when they come back, they would have those attitudinal issues. Some provinces have managed to tone that. I taught for about 20 years within Mpumalanga. When I was around there, I can simply say, you know, there are natural processes in life. When Premier Mahlangu became Premier, the problem was so heavy before that time. And when Premier became a Premier and education approached him by the then MEC, it became easy because it could be handled across education and tradition, because they were departing from that kind of a center to say there was a total disruption in Mpumalanga at some point, heavy, and Mpumalanga in our results, if you check 10 years back, they were also the bottom. But after the intervention of the Premier with his across kind of existence within the Mahlangu, it changed the results. More than any other thing, it moves from the bottom line right into the middle point. As we speak today, Mpumalanga has gradually been going up in the results. We are seated with a problem as the Eastern Cape in education. So the disciplinary issues become sort of not your national process where we say education is disrupted. They are those kinds of areas that are very, very problematic that you've got to attend to. And then over time, we are seeing a bit of a settlement because of some kind of control that has come into place. It is happening, but the people who are impacted are our women educators more than the male educators. They are the ones that would suffer very most. When they come back, I'm a man, I don't take any instruction from a woman. Case closed. The male teachers will be then the ones that also intervene in those situations where the school sometimes will make an arrangement that there'll be a transition where there is some kind of rehabilitation, and then the women teachers will go back to teach the subject they ought to teach. So that problem, I come from the school safety directorate, and I've got all the 9 coordinators of provinces. When we talk about that matter, we have moved from that kind of a bullying as a specific bullying more to your cyber bullying and other kinds of bullying. This one has had I don't have an emphasis that specifically this is the kind of bullying that is happening. On the second matter, Chairperson, the calendar that I referred to, the honourable member sort of also shaped it. We are saying, because I took it from Uhoshi that there's a lot of planning and there will be provincial structures. Ideally, it would be our collective responsibility to really make those determinations, that when we talk about the grade 12 learners, they are a minute of that population. It will be those learners that are exiting. If the community of Vuani has been the most affected, it shouldn't be difficult to make a case to say, there is a big impact of about 3 months. There's no way a Saturday or an extra class could address that. And the country gets to be highly impacted where you've got a high metric rate failure, then it moves away from the cost to the effect of education and the cost. So for us, we would want to say we will not control who goes and comes, but it is hoped that through those TICC structures and the technical committees, communities that are impacted by service delivery, and in any way if they've got an impact on education, and it happens to be this season, over and above that, that would be a double impact. Would have dealt with the community crisis, and then would have the schooling again impacted, even when they were to come back. The Deputy Minister referred to the girl children, especially in a particular area. Over time, Deputy Minister, because it's a cultural thing, then the schools begin to sort of inherit that culture and build it in a school program. It's not national. The problem is when something has got a national impact where you find it very difficult in terms of resource. It's a community thing. It is sort of around a particular area, and they would manage that. There will be difficulties depending on whether the family has agreed to. On the last matter, Chairperson, that I thought I said we want to come to the matter of age. Chairperson and the Honourable House, it could be just that as you go back to communities, you might want to test that when we talk about age, maybe it gets a principal decision. When you say age and you want to regulate, you would maybe define it as what, maybe say from teenagehood. Then it might level the playing field if we talk about your concept of a national law, where there's one definition that if you say teenage would be your entry and departing from where we are, it makes a bit of a control and a sense, because you would know in terms of schooling that this is this phase of learning, and it is national norm in any event. There can be a learner who is at FET who is 12 years. There is none. Unless there is a genius of one in 12 million learners, five learners could be parents or teachers. They take their children to school, and then the learner has gone to school too early. But it's not a norm. Our learners, when they reach FET, where we have normalized schooling now, they are at exactly 13 years than they do grade 8 to grade 12. I'm not suggesting that that could be the result, but it could assist if we work with a common principle, so that when we talk about then regulation as education and try to manage schedules and programs, then it has not haphazard one province is this, the other province is that. It then really becomes difficult to manage.
Okay, no, thank you very much. Very helpful. As we deal with clause by clause, we'll have some discussion. If the other areas that we want to make follow-up on, your team will come again and beg you to come in and work it out. Again, emphasis, we are not writing a law of one province. It's a law of general application for all South Africans, irregardless whether white or pink, and then it's a one law. We must avoid, again, taking ourselves as if we are not modernizing. We are also modernizing as a society. We must avoid this conservativeness. I think it's a problem. And anyway, very few people who are conservative are successful in a lot of things. But I think the years issue, I think also the Khali has put it, the Makosi also in the Mpombo, they were putting it. It's very clear that it's something that we must work on it, all of us, and find what is a common understanding. It can be very helpful to us. I know the Eastern Cape were very stuck on the 18 years. On their side, they think 18 years is fine. And then the Tsongas also saying that they started 6 years. And then you can see that there's a variation of this. And therefore, we must have a common definition of that. You can't have a law of Gauteng. Gauteng must deal with its own problem. Otherwise, we are dealing with the law of South Africa. Therefore, there are a lot of things that we must address. But I think this is very good for information and for schooling, for females and male and all that, okay? I think members of parliament have taken note on some of the issues, but also you are going to give us your slides just to ensure that we all have the slides and
then we could consider when we deal it clause by clause. Of course, we are going to meet with other departments. Department of Health, I think, is important also that we interact with them. And AMACOS, we are still going to be interacting with controllers and other AMACOS to assist us to enrich the discussion. And they may come with a lot of general application to all South Africa with variation here and there. And then you don't have crazy variation. And then because once you have those things, then it's gone. And then it can't work. And thank you very much. Huh? Department of Culture, what do you want us to do? We are assisting us also. I see the presentation. Or we are going together with education. It's very good we have cousins very close to each other. Because they can assist us to summarize the issue. Okay, let us invite the Department of Culture to take us through what are the issues. We do have your presentation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members, AMACOSI, honorable deputy minister, and officials present. I'm going to just go to the issues that we have highlighted as the Department of Arts and Culture when we went through the draft bill. Generally, we as a department support this bill as something that is long overdue, and it should have been there a long time, because the issues that we are dealing with have been with us for years and years, and we have not been able to deal with them decisively as a society and as government. We note that the bill does talk about the fact that the parents and guardians need to obtain medical certificates before a child is permitted to attend a customary initiation school. And we think that this is a very progressive move, because we need to know the health of the person who is going to initiation school, that they are fit and proper to undergo the initiation practice. But specifically, there are areas where we thought that as the department, they need to be dealt with in this current draft. We looked at the issue of land use management, especially in urban and peri-urban area. The area of land use management, there are no dedicated spaces for initiation practices. I know that in rural areas, the traditional leaders do dedicate spaces for the practice, but in areas that are urban and peri-urban, the owners of the initiation schools have to find the areas themselves. This is due to the, I will say, the spatial planning of apartheid, where they were planning townships, they did not plan for places for traditional practices. I know, for example, if you live in a township and you want to maybe perform a traditional practice that includes slaughtering of a cow, you do not have spaces. If you live in a foreign house, you will have to slaughter within the area of the foreign houses, and in terms of the laws, it's not permitted. So everyone is breaking the law by slaughtering in the townships. I think that government, especially municipalities, can help by dedicating areas that have got ablution facilities and water so that communities can use them for a whole lot of traditional practices, including initiation practices. The bill does talk about the municipalities assisting with water and sanitation. The problem that I see is that most of these initiation schools are temporary structures in rural areas. So I'm sure the only way to assist with ablution facilities and water is to bring JoJo tanks to the initiation school, because the structures are usually temporary and are destroyed at the end of the initiation period. The other area where we saw a challenge was with the clause 2.4, which talked about the medical practitioner involved in the initiation process to be over 40 years and to have undergone the initiation process himself. We know that some initiates go to hospitals in order to perform the circumcision, and the medical practitioner doing the procedure might not be 40 years old, but might be trained in the actual process of the medical circumcision. So the issue of the medical practitioner being 40 years might be unconstitutional if it is challenged, because there is no law that says that a medical practitioner must have a certain age to practice medicine and to practice surgery. So whatever we put in our bill should not be inconsistent with the law. There is also areas that deal with financial reports detailing income and expenditure. I'm not sure how this will be practiced, because I do not think that most of the people who have initiation schools have got accountants or bookkeepers that can do financial reports in a professional manner. On the whole, Chairperson, we think that this is a very good step and it should be supported by all of us with the improvements that can be made to make sure that the bill is acceptable to the rest of the population. I thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for the presentation, very helpful for us. Members, any issue that you want to raise? It seems you are happy with the cultural aspect of things. Honorable Mthethwa.
Chair, on the issue of the surgical on the surgical part, will the arts and culture agree to say, if it's a medical doctor, we remove the years? But if people have gone there through practice as a traditional way, then we keep the year. Would you then consider agreeing on the years that have been put down here?
Thank you, Chair. My concern is the spatial planning issue. I acknowledge that urban and peri-urban areas, more so in the urban areas, frequently don't make space available for traditional practices. Absolutely acknowledge that. But I don't know that this bill is the right place to address it. I don't know that we can bring it into this bill to force that kind of planning from municipalities, and I think that we would have to go back to probably to SPLUMA, which is with rural development and land reform, to see how we can facilitate the accommodation of traditional practices into spatial planning and land use management.
Okay, colleagues. Bob,
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. On the first question on the matter of the years, we were addressing ourselves to the medical practitioners because that provision was talking about medical practitioners and the fact that they should be over 40 years and should have undergone the initiation practice themselves. It was not talking about traditional surgeons. So we are not talking about the traditional surgeons when we are making this intervention. On the second question of the special urban planning, it is true that this bill will not address the problems caused by urban planners who are planning mostly our townships. But the bill does place an obligation on municipalities to provide certain services. And those services will need to be provided at certain places that don't exist. That is where the bill will have challenges, because municipalities are requested in terms of the bill to provide certain services, and the services will be provided at spaces that don't exist in terms of the present planning. So I think that part of the intergovernmental discussions will be discussions that will have to happen with Department of maybe Land Affairs, but municipalities are involved in the planning of new townships and settlements. So during the planning of new townships, I think this matter can be addressed. And in existing townships, municipalities can rededicate certain spaces for traditional practices. It is something that is doable. Thank you, Chair.
I just want to find out where the bill places the obligation on municipalities. Maybe I'm missing something.
Yeah, Honorable Masson.
Just bring a little question, and the Deputy Minister. Now, I wanted to make a proposal, Chairperson, that we don't look into this kind of detail. It should just be noted as we move forward. Otherwise, we may find ourselves spending more time than the issue deserved if not careful.
No, I'm agreeing with Honorable Masonto. However, somewhere in the legislation, I don't remember that clause, there is such an obligation. 15.1. There is such an obligation. Yes. But also, Honorable Melme is correct to say probably on the specifics on what to do. Perhaps Pluma might be the relevant legislation that we can look at, yeah, because it's still going to come to Parliament and take advantage of it coming back. Thank you.
Okay, colleagues, it's work in progress what we are doing. Is the bill is still going to be working on it in a lot of editions, considering all the views, a lot of questions that are there, you have to answer them. Is work really in progress? I don't think we're going to finalize it now. Sure, we are still going to be meeting with other departments that are interested to give some input. We'll meet also with the Western Cape colleagues here, have a discussion with them. Upungwezi, Bogas, Makos. I'm told also I'm one of them. And then I'm focusing goals. And then, but this one is in Mpumalanga, Nkosimahlangu, we should arrest that person. I think it's just illegal for one individual to harass all of us everywhere when we all knew that is not in course. And then I think it's the wrong way of doing things. And this criminal element, in fact, they're making it difficult for people to enjoy their culture because they're the one who cause more harm anyway than the organized Makosi. We are going to meet with them and ensure we are going to engage with the controlessa. There will be also other NGO anyway who want to engage with us on the very same issues. The NGO will engage us with virginity testing, and they will engage us on many other issues, general, on this matter. And then all of them will be also be with us, have a discussion, and we'll see what we can do. Amakhosi, from time to time also, when there are issues, they will always again be available for all of us to engage until we take the bill to the National Assembly and then see what the National Assembly is saying, and then we can see. But we are still very open for real discussion on this. And then we should do something as a start, and then we can work on it as we move on. And then I think that's what really the issue of intervention is all about. I don't think the bill would solve all the problems that we are facing. All the bogus and the Temasipa, I know that we are in Duna. And in Duna, I'm saying, but we have to address all these issues, there are challenges, but we are very thankful, colleagues, that Amakhosi also are taking a positive view. In fact, I was surprised in Limpopo, there were too many Khoshile Khale, but all of them were very positive. What they only said, one thing, please, on the years, please, accommodate us on age. All other things are correct, but just avoid the age issue. Of course, historically, indigenous knowledge, although they explain the reason why they were cutting that. Similar issue in the Eastern Cape for 18 years. Similar issue to those also were saying their songs, and people are able to express their views. But generally, all of them, in principle, accepted the bill. And, of course, women were predominant in meetings. Also, they really accepted the bill. They make very cogent point and reasoning. I think it was a good approach. It seems we are not really moving backward. It seems more and more we are moving forward. We can address some of the challenges. And then Amakhosi playing their role will assist us a lot on this. The urban setting is a really difficult situation because everyone in Nkosi Manjelapa. And then many Nkosis now, I think even Alexander will have Nkosi Papele. We have never had Nkosi, suddenly we'll be Nkosi Papele conducting Ukulukhate, Nkosi Yamba Yabasa Bambo Bonk, and then Mdupungani, Nkosi Pungani the second. And all Namakos are from Bosho because they are not real Namakos. And then I think engaging with the Inzi Amakos is going to assist us a lot in Nkosi. Until we take the bill to the chamber and then have a discussion there. Whatever views that we still have, we have to engage, try to ensure that a law that we set up is a law that generally people will first respect, and also try then to improve as we move on. We take the point that we are raising education in many parts of the country that was raised, and then should deal with the situation. Hopefully, I'm a course. It would also assist us to deal with the content of this initiation school. It can't be right that we teach them what should be a responsible person. They come back, they insult female teachers. Can't just be right. Complete, because they insult their mothers, broadly speaking. It can't be right. And there's something wrong somewhere that we must work it out. Namakhosi to ensure that life orientation, then one way or another, is there. The point that we have raised, Honorable Deputy Minister, also they are accommodated there. Leave the other issues general on that, and I think taking this issue, what we're saying on an Mthetho, would be important. I think indigenous knowledge is very important general on this issue. In fact, when we I think was in Rustenburg, an old lady, I think she's much beyond a pro register, but very articulate, she explained exactly why the Kasha is all about. And then she dispel all the myth that has been there, general, because again, if dealing of fear, myth about culture, she was a very good person. She, in fact, took us through the intention of a school, what you want to achieve from the school, not what you are achieving now. I think it was an issue that you must address. And then because those who don't know themselves, that sometimes they create problems because they distort a very good culture for our people and make it their own and distort the main object of the culture. We'll meet with Amakosi, we'll meet with everyone, and then surely we are going to be speeding it up, have discussion. But because in the Amakosi corner, those, every time we want to meet with us, I think we'll be available to engage, just to ensure that we don't do things that are not correct in terms of culture and tradition. And there will be accommodation of our views and the views of some of the people who are there. The staff is there from the department. I think they're taking notes for the issues. Then we'll have a good discussion on this. If the other department will still want to come in, of course we'll meet with them. I know the human rights people also, the CRL, they want to engage with us. There are many people who want to engage with us, particularly at the female level, NGO level. I think we'll engage with them. Hopefully all of us will finalize this. And then thank you very much for your presentation. And then we should adjourn our meeting. And then we'll then have a discussion again what you want to do on this. Thank you, Kula Makosi, for coming. And then very pleased for you. And my department, thank you very much, colleague. Let us adjourn the meeting. Go and eat.
Thank you.